Thanks for listening to Schlereth and Evans On Demand. Did you know you can listen to us on Alexa? Enable our skill today, then say, Alexa, play 104.3 The Fan.
Are you ready?
Let's clear the air with Mark Schlereth.
It's gone from suck to blow.
What?
How good do we got it right now in Denver, Colorado? Seriously. I mean, you think about this. Avs just had an incredible comeback. Down 2-0 in the third period to come back and to win that game in overtime, to go up 3-1 of the series against Calgary Flames, who are the number one seed. To be able to do that, incredible. Just an incredible comeback. You got the Rockies, who are on a three-game win streak, seem to have figured it out pitching-wise a little bit, and obviously at the dish with Nolan Arenado going three straight games with the bomb. Like, they're starting to figure it out. You're kind of getting excited, and they've got a big test with the Phillies coming in. Because the Phillies are a really good baseball team. So, you know, you've got that going on. And now you got the Nuggets, who had this dramatic 19-point comeback the other night. Now they're going to tip it off against the San Antonio Spurs tonight. And that's where I want to go. The San Antonio Spurs, they have had your number in San Antonio. And I think the one thing that you can learn, or there's several things you can learn, but the one thing you can learn from the Nuggets' victory against San Antonio is you're not going to go, Jamal Murray's not going 8-for-8 in the fourth quarter to, you know, to bring you guys back to the victory. You're not going to just be knocking down every single shot. I think the big thing for me in that fourth quarter was the way the Nuggets played defense. Because when the Nuggets play defense and create turnovers and create extra possessions, that's when they open up and that's when they can start pouring it on you. So that was my biggest difference, or my biggest takeaway in that comeback from down 19 in that fourth quarter, where they were knocking down shot after shot after shot, and Jamal Murray, you know, the quote-unquote blue arrow, was knocking down every shot he took. The biggest part was defensively, the way they poked the ball out of San Antonio's hands, the way they, you know, denied an inbounds. Those are the things to me that made the biggest difference and created an opportunity for them to run and then to start knocking down shots. So this is my kind of take on the Nuggets. Do it defensively. Have the defensive intensity that you had in the fourth quarter in your last game. Start that defensive intensity in quarter number one, and good things are going to happen to you in San Antonio tonight when you get your titties on the hard court.
That was awesome.
Clear the air with Mark Schlereth.
Well, let's be honest. This series has been ugly. I mean, we talked to Earl Boykins yesterday, and he said the same thing. Like, this series has been ugly. Neither team has played their best basketball. The Nuggets showed some signs, though, in the fourth quarter, the last time out. Got to carry that over.
You got to be able to carry that over. And I think, you know, I think that's one thing about you're learning how to play playoff basketball, and it's obviously it's different, and it's funny because I have, you know, all these connections from my ESPN days and you know, from my Fox days now, of guys who played in the league and guys who played in the league for a long time and guys who won championships, and they all said the same thing. Like, nobody ever talked about the Nuggets. Nobody. Like, I'd be on these national shows and I'd be like, hey man, you know, the Nuggets are number two. Yeah. We talk about LeBron. We talk about the Warriors. We talk about, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks. We talk about teams that to us are relevant. And the Nuggets, their whole thing on the Nuggets, oh, yeah, really good team, really good team. Yeah, they're not going to do anything in the playoffs. Really good team. Super great. Yeah, like, and, you know, I mean, not that we talk about the Nuggets all the time, because we don't. And not that you know, I mean, you're still a proud Denver citizen, you know, you're still rooting for your teams, but every guy I talk to says they just don't, they're young and they are not going to understand the playoff intensity and what it takes to win in the playoffs. And really what it ends up being is, how do you play defense in NBA playoffs so that you can get your extra possessions and so that you can transition. It's a transition game. And so you can run, you can play with a little bit more pace. And it starts on it's almost counterintuitive. It starts on the defensive end. You know, it's like playing golf. Like, the harder you swing, the more likely it is to spray it all over the place. And it's a smooth, controlled kind of power that creates the best drives. And NBA basketball in the playoffs, from all the guys that I talked to, and I talked to a bunch of them, they're all like, man, it starts with defensive intensity. It's a different game in the NBA playoffs than it is in the regular season. And that's what they're going to have to learn. And most guys didn't feel like they could do it. I think they took a big step winning that game where it looked like they were going to go down, you know, 0-2 in their own, you know, in their own backyard.
Right.
And so this is big. Now, it'll be interesting because they haven't had success in San Antonio against Greg Popovich and the Spurs. So right. It'll be interesting to see exactly how they play this one out.
Well, and everyone's looking at it almost the opposite way. They're taking away the wrong points from the Blue Arrow and Jamal Murray, you know, going unconscious there in the fourth quarter. Like, the points to take away are the inbounds pass. The points to take away are the steals. The points to take away are the defensive notes that that team hit to win. You got Greg Pop in his house. You better be excellent defensively if you want to put up a fight.
Well, I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, you know, the whole way we got to hit more shots. Well, they did that down the stretch, and that was incredible. But that to me is a game plan to lose. Like, if you're just relying on, hey, the Joker is one of the great passing, you know, big men is in the post. He's a great passing big man, and he can, you know, he can do all those things. And he'll make the right play, and he'll facilitate, and he'll do those things. You know, knocking down shots, your whole game plan is knocking down shots. You know, shots are, like, they're like bananas. They come in bunches, you know? And I just am not a believer in saying, hey, all we got to do is knock down shots. Because I just think there's so much more to it. And I thought in game two, the Joker was a little bit more aggressive, you know, in the paint, was a little bit more aggressive, getting it to the rim, was a little bit more, he's not a selfish player. He's a very unselfish player, but he was a little bit more selfish in trying to get points.
That's not a bad thing.
No, it's a really good thing. And so, you know, I think there's a fine line, you know, there's a fine line in, hey, facilitate when everybody's knocking down shots. That's great. But when the shots aren't going down, create.
Take over.
Right.
You know, everyone calls him a superstar. Okay. That's what superstars do. And it's okay to be selfish. It's okay to take it to the hole, and then either you're going to make it or you're going to get fouled. And also, don't get frustrated. One thing we've seen with the Joker is that physical play can frustrate him.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get in his head, and then he's off his game.
Right.
So he has to know that fine line between being a facilitator to taking over, while also at the same time not getting frustrated when guys are double-teaming him and hacking him.
Yeah, easier said than done, obviously. But, you know, I mean, you know where the double-teams are coming from. So, you know, roll away from the double-teams or whatever. So, you know, there's a lot of that stuff that goes on when you're watching the Nuggets. But the Nuggets have got to, you know, they've got to do a good job of knocking down shots. There's no question about that. They've got to do a better job of knocking down shots, but that can't be your game plan. And I think what we saw the other night, I think that to me is the thing that's the difference, is we saw a defensive intensity late in that game that we hadn't seen for the first three quarters. And that's how you're going to win a playoff game, especially down in San Antonio. So, that's, you know, that to me is where they have to start. And, you know, when you play it that way, good things end up happening to you. For me, it's like when you dictate in the running game. We dictate in the running game, even when we call it and run it, and we know we're going to get 3 or 4 yards, and we dictate to you in those situations in the red zone, good things are going to happen to us as an offense. When we dictate in that, it's like in NBA parlance, when you play defense, good things are going to happen to you on the offensive side of the court. When you run the game, and you shove it down somebody's throat, when you run the ball and shove it down somebody's throat, big things are going to happen to you in the passing game. You're going to get some big one-on-one shots. You know, you're going to get shot, kind of big shots. And that's, like, that's what the Nuggets have to do.
Big things happening at the Pepsi Center, certainly with the Avs and the Nuggets, and big things hopefully going to happen and continue to happen for those Colorado Rockies. Can they build on the positive momentum they've created over the last few games? Our Rockies insider Patrick Saunders will tell us yes or no next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to efirstbank.com/business for more details.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans
Well, the Rockies have done it, Stink. They've bounced back. They've built some positive momentum. The bats seem to be warming up, and the pitching is coming through. So can they keep it up after that start that had us all depressed?
Right.
Here in the Mile High City, can they build on the positive momentum that they've now created?
You know what? This is going to be a big test. Phillies are 11-6. The Rockies 6-12. Phillies, obviously, they've made a lot of noise, and it's not just Bryce Harper, but they've got a really good team. They've surrounded themselves with a lot of talent, and it shows. I mean, they're playing really good baseball. So this is going to be a great test for the Colorado Rockies. The thing that, you know, obviously with the pitching that we saw from Marquez and from Sensatella and then on John Gray, where he went 7-2 Thursday the other night, I think he was phenomenal, even though he still gave up a home run, but he limited his issues. That was really impressive. Can we get that same kind of performance out of Kyle Freeland tonight? That's going to be like, so we've gotten it three performances in a row, and there you see the three wins in a row. And while we've been pitching well, all of a sudden the bats have come alive, and we've started scoring some runs. So, like, those are great. Those are absolutely awesome things to have happen to you as a baseball club.
Is John Gray the fulcrum of this entire conversation, of this season? Like, before the season, that was kind of a thought out there. Like, we have expectations for Freeland. We have expectations for Marquez. John Gray was the big unknown. Like, if he continues to pitch well and come through, is that the guy where at the end of the year you could say, here's what John Gray did, and I can tell you, okay, that's how the Rocky season turned out, without seeing anything else?
Yeah, because you looked at it like, if we could develop a number three starter, you know, that could really be, like, he can be a dominant player. And, you know, I think one thing that we always talk about now is we talk about spin rate, you know, and how much the ball spins. And I think there are times when he has got one of the most hittable 97-mile-an-hour fastballs in baseball. You know, it's just straight, and it doesn't have great spin, so it doesn't feel like it rides, you know. And I think that's been an issue with John Gray. But when he's painting and he's on the corners, and when he's got a secondary pitch working well for him, you know, he's got legit punch out stuff. But I think he's a big key. And then obviously, you know, what we do 1 through 5 at the dish is really important. You know, how Charlie's playing, how Arenado's playing, how Story is playing. You know, Desmond seems to be hitting the ball better. Ian Desmond seems to be hitting the ball better here these last three games. Like, when you're pitching really well and there's almost like there's pressure taken off. Like, I don't have to score every time. Like, every swing doesn't have to be a home run swing. Then I think you've got, you know, I feel like the pressure's come off them to some degree. I know they're still 6-12, so they're still, you know, quite a bit behind 500, but that's what they're creeping toward 500.
You know baseball well, so I want to ask you this. I'm incredibly curious about the answer, because what's the difference between being an ace and having ace stuff? Like, John Gray's always had ace stuff. He hasn't been an ace.
Right.
So is it just what's between the ears? Is it just mental to get over that? Is that Gray's biggest hurdle?
I think there's some of it's, I think some of it's physical. I think some of it's obviously mental, is you've got to be constantly locked in. I think the other thing that you have to be able to do is even when you have A stuff, there are going to be nights when you don't have A stuff. Like, when you're not going to have command of every pitch, and there's going to be nights where you just don't feel it. And the great pitchers that I've been around, the guys that, you know, that I have a relationship with, the guys that I talk to, will all say, in those moments, I can find a way to get guys out. And it may not be a 12 strikeout game. It may not look really pretty, but at the end of the day, it's going to be a quality start. I'm not going to have my A game stuff, and I'm going to find a way to get guys out. And that to me is what separates kind of the ace from the guy who's a potential ace.
Patrick Saunders is our Rockies insider. He's presented by Rox Heating and Air. That's ROX, Rox Heating and Air. He joins us now on the VIP line. Patrick, can the Rockies continue to build on the positive momentum that we've seen over the last few games?
Well, guys, let's hope so. Good signs. I mean, let's face it, it was a terrible start, worst start in franchise history. I heard you guys just talking about the pitching, and outside of Herman Marquez, they kind of let him down. But, yeah, they can build some momentum. They certainly need to, because after this relatively short homestand, then they have to go back on the road and go to Atlanta and then Milwaukee, and Milwaukee's playing terrific baseball. But to answer your question, yeah, I think this is the time they need to show us all and show themselves that they're not just a bad or a mediocre team. They need to start putting all the pieces together and coming home. You know, they're 0-5 so far at home, so they need to pull it together right now.
How important is this start for Freeland?
I think it's a big start for Kyle, and I'll tell you why. He's had three losses in a row. Two of those games he pitched poorly. One of them he didn't pitch that badly. But I think it is a big start for Kyle. It's after such a terrific year last year, this is really the first hurdle he's faced where his stuff and location hasn't been all that good. But I have no doubt. I think Kyle's going to come out tonight. I have that much faith in him. I think he's going to come out tonight and he's going to show us the Kyle Freeland we saw last year because, one, I think he's too good a pitcher, to let two, three game slide get him down. I think he's that smart. I think he's that much of a tactician. He knows himself. He knows how to correct himself. So I think we're going to see a good start from Kyle. But to your question, Stink, it is an important start because, you know, you don't want to start second guessing yourself, with 4 or 5 games in a slide. But I don't think Kyle's going to let that happen. I have a lot of faith in him as a very savvy young pitcher.
How about at the dish? The last couple of games, they've produced some runs. Nolan Arenado has gone yard 3 times, 3 back-to-back games. How important has that been for them, and how much do they need that to continue, you know, to take some pressure off of Kyle Freeland tonight and so on and so forth?
Well, that's a good point. I don't think it's just taking pressure off Kyle Freeland. I think it's kind of an escape valve for the whole team because they were pressing. There's no doubt about it. They were all slumping. Nolan hadn't hit a home run yet. I talked to him extensively before he hit the home run in San Francisco, and he admitted he was pressing. And I think when everybody throughout the lineup is clenching the bat too tight, when you've got a number of players out with injury, David Dahl and Ryan McMahon, who should be back soon, I think guys tend to want to do too much. And baseball's, you know, in football, Stink, you know this, you get ticked off or something, you can use that energy, you know, to cream the guy across from you. And, you know, and you can channel that in a different way. Baseball, particularly hitting, it doesn't work that way. Sometimes the harder you try, the more you want to. Sometimes the results just don't come. And I think that's what was happening with this entire unit. And I think when Nolan starts feeling it, that's a good sign for him because I've always said with Nolan, the moment he really relaxes and lets go is on the baseball field, except when he gets uptight, and he was definitely uptight, and then all that energy becomes counterproductive. But I think it's a good sign that Nolan is off the schneid, so to speak. Next on the list is Charlie Blackmon, who is still not hit a home run. And I believe in his last 7 games, I think he's hitting 121 or something like that. He has not looked very good so far this spring. I don't think he's looked particularly good in right field, and he hasn't looked good in the plate. So Charlie really needs to find himself.
Rockies need to continue on this winning path. We'll see if they can do that, of course, tonight against the Phillies out there at Coors Field, 640 first pitch. Patrick Saunders, Rockies beat writer and insider for the Denver Post, and he's presented by Rox Heating and Air. That's ROX, Rox Heating and Air. Patrick, always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks very much for joining the show.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, there we have him. It's Patrick Saunders talking about those Colorado Rockies. We'll see if they can get it done. Well, 1 week from tonight, of course, is the 2019 NFL Draft, and make sure to join us next Wednesday at our Fan War Room Draft Special. Be the fourth caller now, 303-713-1043, to win a pair of VIP tickets. It's our Fan War Room Draft Special. Again, fourth caller now, 303-713-1043, to win a pair of VIP tickets. In 4 Down Territory, we'll go over why the Denver Broncos have a certain stretch in their schedule that is more important than any other. That's next.
Professional football in America is a special game.
This is Four Down Territory.
I'd like to start out with a thank you to John Elway.
That just happened.
All right, now I'll kill a snitch. I'm not saying I have. I'm not saying I have.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountain?
On Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan.
Gentlemen, this is the real thing. This is what you've been trained for.
First down.
There's always going to be things you're going to want to know, like when your bye week is, and, you know, there's some things that you can look at and start to prepare your mind for. But in reality, it's that stuff's a long ways away. I'm taking it one step at a time, and we got a long ways to go before we get to the opener. And, excited about wherever it takes us, and we'll control that. We'll worry about that as we get a little closer to it. I really haven't thought about it much, so.
There's new Broncos OC Rich Scangarello saying, I hasn't really thought about the schedule, which has been released. We know who the Broncos are going to play, when they're going to play, and when their bye week is. Is that really the most important thing when this thing's released, looking at the bye?
The bye is always the first. As a player, the bye is always the first thing you look. Where's our bye?
Week 10.
Yeah, week 10, which is a good thing. For me, it was always about when can I schedule a surgery? Just put me on the board week 10, because you know I'm going to have surgery, right? So, I'll fight, I'll grind through it until week 10, and then, I'll go get cleaned up. So that was always one of the things. I think the other thing, is there an opponent that you have that is exceptionally tough? And maybe it's an individual matchup. I always used to look for the Chargers. When do we play the Chargers? Because the Chargers defense was the one. Now, the Chargers weren't any good, right? I mean, they were horrible back in those days. But defensively, they were outstanding. They had one of the worst offenses in football, and they had one of the best defenses. It's kind of like the Broncos now. If you think about it, like when I was playing in the mid to late 90s here, like what San Diego was then, what the Chargers were then, is what we are now. Outstanding defense, just awful offense. They had Junior Seau. They had John Perella, they had Jamal Williams, they had Rodney Harrison, they had Kirk Gavea, they could play.
That's a bunch of nasty right there.
Yeah, they could play. And so I would always look for the Chargers, like, when do we have to play the Chargers? Because I knew that was going to be an all-day sucker. Like, we'd win. I knew we'd win. But I knew at the end of the day, we'd barely eke out 100 yards rushing. They're the only team that could, the only team that ever stymied us running the ball was the Chargers. Just them.
Next in Four Down Territory.
Second down.
Hey, everybody. Tracy Morgan here. You know, a lot of people ask me about my show, The Last OG. They want to know what does OG stand for. It's obvious, isn't it? The original giant. So I'm here now to unveil the 2019 Giants fall TV lineup with new episodes starting in September.
Tracy Morgan releases the Giants schedule. I don't know if you saw this, but NFL.com had all the teams... Their schedule release. They did a bunch of videos. There were some Game of Thrones videos. There were some video game videos where teams like ripped off Paperboy and Madden, all that kind of stuff to release their schedule. About four teams just released a picture of their schedule. Way to go, guys. A for effort. And the Giants use Tracy Morgan.
I love Tracy Morgan. He's a piece of work now. I've gotten to bump into him several times over the course of my announcing career. He's a piece of work. He's just a good dude. Like, Tracy Morgan's a great guy. So I always think of him as Brian Fellows, though. In the skit, Saturday Night Live skit. You don't remember that, the Saturday Night Live skit, but he's Brian Fellows?
I always think of him as his character on 30 Rock, whatever that name was.
Okay. Yeah, he was Tracy Morgan.
He was Tracy Morgan.
Yeah. He plays himself.
Plays himself on
pretty much
30 Rock.
Yeah. Yeah, Brian Fellows was like, rainforest? That sounds wet. You know? I loved him. He's great.
Next on Four Down Territory.
Third down.
Gronk thought of a great idea. He'd play around and get a swing. And as he's lined up, Jules is the pitcher. Gronk standing there, and I think we're all under the impression, I mean, no way is he going to swing a Lombardi trophy.
A little strange. We're thinking he's not going to swing the bat. He's not going to do it. When 11 throws the ball, we see 87 go from a batting position to a bunt.
Do you hear the sound of that?
Yeah.
That's a baseball going off the Lombardi trophy. Rob Gronkowski dented the Lombardi Trophy.
I know. The guy just has no, he's got no filter. Which doesn't kinda, care. I respect that about him. He doesn't. Like, that's going to be good. And I'm, like, that's their sixth Lombardi Trophy. I'm all about just leaving a dent in it. It's a great story. It's up in the showcase, and they're like, ooh, what happened to that? Right? Well, let me tell you the story. Tell you a story about Rob Gronkowski. I hope they don't fix it. I hope they just continue to display it the way it is.
Right. Just leave it damaged.
Mm-hmm.
And then make it a cautionary tale, because only Gronk could get away with that.
Yeah, there's
maybe Tommy, your guy, but
there's only one guy. Now, Tommy would never. It's Tom Brady. He's not going to, you know, lay down a bump with a Lombardi Trophy.
It matched the dent in his chin.
Yeah. Nope, he won't do it.
I love Tom Brady.
He's already got the swell cleft in his chin. He's not going to lay down a bunt.
You want to snuggle up in that cleft, don't you?
It's a hammock. Be great. Love that guy. So good.
Sit back, relax.
Yeah, I don't know why you wouldn't.
Be awesome.
Yeah.
Next in four down territory.
Fourth down.
So in January we have three birthdays. So we've got, you know, family birthday party, which includes cake, and then we've got friends birthday party, which includes cake. So that's six times in January. We've got three birthdays in March: March 1st, March 6th, and March 11th. Which again, that's a tough stretch. That's cake six out of what is that, 10 or 11 days?
Ryan Fitzpatrick talking about his portly self. He's quite round now. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen the pictures and the hashtag Fats Magic running around.
Yes.
As Ryan Fitzpatrick, he's put on some weight and then some, blaming it on the birthday cake.
Yeah.
Which then I go, well, Philip Rivers has like 100 kids and he's not fat.
Well, Philip Rivers, didn't he just have his ninth? I think he just has
nine kids.
Fitzpatrick has seven. He has seven kids. So, yeah, I mean, like, push away from the birthday cake. He'll start working out. I wonder if he thought he was just done before somebody came.
Is
call
that what that body says?
It yeah,
says
it's like, just like, I think I've, you know what? I'm good.
But that's beyond dad bod. Like, the Ryan Fitzpatrick pictures, I mean, he looks like Jared Lorenzen. Not quite that bad.
No. He he is all kinds of fat in these pictures.
Yeah.
Fats Patrick. I didn't actually see that one. I like that, though.
Fats Magic?
Fats Magic.
Fats Magic?
Yeah.
Okay.
That just says to me that, hey, listen, if somebody signs me, great. If not, that's okay, too. I've done enough. I'm good.
I got birthday parties.
Right, I got birthday parties to attend. We got cake to eat.
Fats Magic. Seven kids.
Yeah,
seven kids.
He's got seven.
Wow. Okay. All right, Fats Magic. We'll see if he can whip himself into shape here during minicamp.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll be fine. He'll start motoring around. He'll, you know, get out there and start running. And
do guys in the locker room like tell him to cover up? Be like, dude, come on, please.
Yeah, he's like, oh, put a towel on, dude. It's gross.
Just taking the shirt off.
Just disgusting.
Yeah, yeah, quarterbacks aren't supposed to be chiseled though.
Yeah, you don't have to be chiseled. You don't have to be chiseled, but.
But you can't be fat.
Right, you just don't want to be. Like, you can be. Yeah. You don't want to be gross fat. You don't want to be pudgy. Right, you can be husky. Right?
You can have some love handles like, as a quarterback.
Roethlisberger's husky. You're all right with that.
Right.
You don't want to be sloppy.
Does Mike Evans have a Fitzpatrick bod? Fats Magic bod?
No, he's a little bit more trim than Fitzpatrick, but he's, you know, he's a few birthdays away. Right. He's got your classic, like, upside down bowling pin shape to him. I don't know what you call it.
Wasn't that a regular bowling pin?
Right.
Because he's pear shaped, right?
Yeah, he kind of. Yeah. Yeah.
A pair with wispy hair.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, yeah, kind of spindly legs. He's got the big bottom. You know, he's kind of got that shape to him.
Okay. There we go. It's a pear shape for Mike Evans and his big bottom. That's a wrap for Four Down Territory. It gets weird here. You hear it every morning, 7:30 here on Schlereth and Evans. When we look at the Denver Broncos, the culture is changing at Dove Valley, but can it actually do that? We hear from Von Miller's comments from yesterday and get into that next.
It's Schlereth and Evans on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Can you change a culture as an NFL team? Or, as Gary Barnett always says, you don't change a culture, you create a culture.
Mm-hmm.
What is Vic Fangio doing out there right now with the Broncos? Is he creating his culture, or is he changing the culture?
I think you're trying to create a culture. I mean, and obviously that culture will change, but it's got to be something. The thing that's interesting about culture is that's got to be, it's got to be worked on. It's got to be lived out every single day. Every day you have to live that brand. And you know, culture is interesting because it follows the path of least resistance. If you don't establish it, you don't preach it every day. You don't talk about it every day. You don't lead it, you know, or example, lead by example, or you don't have it for everybody to see on a daily basis. Guys just kind of forget about it. Guys just do what's easiest, you know? And so that culture is something that has to be established and has to be worked on and has to be preached and has to be lived out, most importantly. Like every single day, you have to be able to live that out. And so, you know, it starts with the people in charge saying, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. And then you've got to just, you got to put an example out there every day. You know, you got to make sure that everybody adheres to it from your coaching staff on down. And the players will follow, but it can't be fake. It has to be authentic. It has to be real. And there can't be mixed messages. There can't be mixed signals. You can't all of a sudden, you know, you've preached a certain culture, you've preached a certain thing, you know, from a player standpoint or whatever, and then something happens to you as an organization and you go complete 180 the opposite way and say, well, you know, we're going to make an exception this time for this. Because once you do it once, everybody's just like, okay, you guys are full of baloney. You don't practice what you preach.
There has to be a standard for everyone.
Yeah.
It's not like you can say death by inches and then let Flacco be late for a meeting or whatever.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So those are the things that have to be worked on every day, and they have to be, you know, they have to be, there's got to be an example of those every day. They've got to be there, and you've got to be basically adhere to those things on a daily basis.
Some very interesting comments coming from Von Miller yesterday out at UCL Training Center about how the feeling around the building has changed.
Yeah, hell yeah. I mean, you know, we're running, you know, a branch of, you know, Shanahan's offense on offense, and we're running Fangio defense on defense. It's two great schemes. We got a lot of great players. We had a lot of young guys that came in, made a lot of great plays and had an impact on the team last year. And those guys are going to be second-year players this year. You know, their load is going to jump all the way up. Cortland Sutton is going to play out of his mind this year, and Bradley Chubb and, you know, Phillip Lindsay and all of those guys and, you know, and myself. And, you know, we got Flacco. He's a big-time quarterback. You know, he knows what it feels like to win a Super Bowl, and he's been there. He's done it. And we, you know, I've been there and I've done it on defense as well. So we've got a lot of great pieces. We just got to go out there and win. And I think with Fangio leading the ship, it's a good fit for us. It just feels good. It just feels good. It just feels different. And, you know, we got to get everybody all the way in. It's still early. You know, I'm one of the most optimistic guys that there are, you know. So if you're asking me, it feels good. And this is the team to do it.
Feels good, feels different. And Vaughn brings up the young guys almost first.
Mm-hmm.
What role do those second-year players that he mentioned have in building the culture they want?
Well, I mean, I think you're always looking for leadership. You're always looking for guys to step up. You're always looking for guys to assume those roles. And it's great when a young player does that. You know, when a young player just says, no, I'm good with this. I'm good with being a team captain, or I'm good with being the guy who calls the defense. You know, I was talking to Mike about this a couple of days ago. Like, I was here when they drafted Al Wilson. Al Wilson took charge, a middle linebacker. And I think at the time we were having safeties call the defense. Al was like, no, that's my job. I'm the middle linebacker. I call the defense. And everybody's like, okay. I mean, he just assumed that role. He was in charge. And just because you're young doesn't mean you can't lead. And so he did, and that was a playoff team. That was 2000. 2000. And Al Wilson was that guy. So I just think there's opportunity when you're a young guy. You know, a lot of the young guys, they come in and they just want to make the team, and I get that part of it, and I was there. But eventually you can be a guy that establishes a way to do things. You can outwork people, outstudy people, outprepare people. And when you do that and you have success, guys will naturally gravitate to you, regardless of your Von Miller and you're playing in year whatever it is, 8 or 9, or your Bradley Chubb playing in year 2.
And that's not unusual. You don't think it's unusual for this young core to take that leadership role? I don't know if you remember a couple of weeks ago when Cortland Sutton talked. And he said it kind of went under the radar. Mm-hmm. But Cortland Sutton was like, yeah, as a group, we saw some stuff last year and we didn't really say anything. We're going to say stuff this year if we see stuff that's out of line.
Right.
I was like, wow, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. I think for every guy, it's a little bit different. I think there was such a leadership vacuum or leadership and just a leadership drop off because you had DeMarcus Ware and you had Peyton Manning and everybody just leaned on those guys to provide that leadership, to provide that, you know, that kind of put your foot down and hold guys accountable. And so you get to the point where you're just like, oh, you know, we got those guys. We're good. And those guys will take care of it. And nobody else actually thinks about, well, that's not my responsibility. It's those guys, those two have it. And then all of a sudden those two guys are gone and nobody knows how to do it. And so I think it's good for young players. Like, you don't have to be a old wily veteran to be in a leadership role. All you have to do is play well, be exceptional, work hard, and, you know, prepare, and guys will respect that. So I know it's harder to do as a young player. But it's not impossible by any stretch.
How could this team not be ready for that leadership void? Like losing Manning, you throw in Ware there as well. Like the whole complacency era, the whole Vance Joseph era. Like how as a team, as an executive, as if you're John Elway, how do you not know what's coming? And you know, maybe be surprised there would be a leadership void. Which there was.
Yeah, there's no question. I just think that I think it's really hard because, you know, Peyton is so domineering. Like Mike always talks about it. Evan said when he came into the day he walked into the building in what was it, 2012, instant change. Holding guys accountable. You know, and making sure you do things the right way, instant changeover. And I just think, you know, I just think it's really hard because everybody relies on that guy. He's the guy that, you know, he's the guy that cracks the whip, so to speak, in there and makes sure that everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing. And I just think that I think oftentimes what ends up happening is you don't have to develop a leadership role, so you don't. Like, you know, I think God bless my wife. I don't know how to do anything. Right?
You know how to do landscaping.
Right. But I know. But I mean, like, when it comes to running the house, I don't know how to do anything.
Oh, she packs her clothes, everything.
She has everything. Like, if, God forbid, I ever were to lose her, like, there would be a huge leadership void in our house. You know, I'd be like, but I would eventually learn how to do everything. But right now, I just rely on her. I don't know how to do anything. You know, and I think that's, you know, that was Peyton Manning. Everybody just relied on Peyton to do it. Nobody learned how to do it because they didn't need to. Peyton would do it. Peyton's got it. Peyton's right. Got it. Then all of a sudden Peyton's gone. You're like, oh shoot. I don't know how to do this, right? I don't know. So I think there's a big part of that that has to be, you know, that has to be figured out. I've always said, and I've had a bunch of guys that I've talked to about this. You know, in my day, we didn't have the iPads with all the film and everything on it, you know? So it wasn't about going home and studying film, and you did it in the facility. And so, you know, you get there early and you'd stay late and you'd grind together. And the belief, and especially as an offensive lineman, you know, 4 eyes are better than 2 and 8 eyes are better than 4 and 16 eyes are better than 8. So the more guys you had in there going through stuff, the more you guys could collectively kind of understand what was going on. And I've talked to a lot of guys who have just said the technology is kind of ruined it because a lot of guys will take that stuff home They're just letting it run. They don't really, they're not really studying it. It's just running.
Right. And you can tell how much they've watched. You just can't tell if they've watched. Because you can press play and then go play Fortnite.
Yeah. You can do anything you want. Exactly.
Right.
So you can just push it and roll through it. And again, it's how much you're really, you know, the difference between breaking down film and studying film and just watching it is a big difference there. So culture in an organization is incredibly important. It's incredibly important.
How much is on Von Miller? And why do we always have this conversation of like, Von the leader, Von's the leader, and Von's going to be the leader, and we're still, I want Von to be Von.
Yeah.
I could really give a damn if he's a leader or not. I just want him to be himself, because maybe being that rah-rah, come on, guys, maybe that's not him. Maybe that shouldn't be him.
Right.
So how much of this is on Von to fill that leadership void?
I think we've been trying to do that for a while since DeMarcus left. You know, mm-hmm. I think Vaughn's tried to do that. I don't think that's his, I just don't think that's his wheelhouse. Like, just line up and go get the quarterback and we'll figure it out. Now there's certain things that you have to be better. You can't be jumping off sides in critical situations. You've got to have a little bit more like football intelligence. Down distance situations, you know, where you guys are. But, you know, to try to make somebody the vocal leader of a football team that isn't comfortable being the vocal leader of a football team, I just don't think that works. You know, the guy's got to be willing and ready to take over. And I think I just think that there's some people that are born that have that natural skill and ability and feel comfortable doing that, and some people don't. You know, and it's funny. It was funny because, you know, I think you look at things differently. I was asking, you know, Matt Ryan when I was doing an Atlanta game, Matt Ryan and Dan Quinn, the coach, and Dan Quinn was like, listen, Matt had to take a step back, so to speak. Like Matt would just grind on guys to the point where maybe they didn't perform like they should. He'll hold everybody accountable and he'll hold himself accountable. But even Matt said, you know, I've gotten older. I'm a little bit more gentle about the way I rip into guys. Now I still rip into guys, but you know, then I'll come by and, you know, kind of put my arm around them and talk to them about it. And it's just as interesting how you have to develop as that leader. But I don't know that Vaughn leads by, he's having fun. He keeps everybody loose and he's going out there and rolling. It's like good cop, bad cop, right? He's good cop.
Always the good cop.
Yeah, always good cop. Like, it's going to be fine. I'm optimistic. We're going to be all right. Let's roll.
Don't they need that bad cop then?
Then, yeah, I think that they do.
Who is that?
Well, right now, I don't know that they have that guy on their roster.
I've always said the captains of that defense should be Chris Harris Jr. and Derek Wolfe. I have no idea why it's not been that. Mm-hmm. But I'm in the locker room, you know, four times a week. Those two are the leaders. I don't know why they're not captains, but those two guys are the leaders.
Yeah, to me, I mean, you look at Chris Harris Jr., like, that's a no-brainer. He's been one of the greatest players, one of the best players at his position, in one of the toughest positions in football. You're slot corner. And he's smart. He studies. You know, he makes plays all over the football field. He draws the toughest assignments every week. I mean, there's a guy that everybody in that locker room respects and probably should be the leader of that defense.